This is a Jeff Galloway podcast.
Welcome to 3-2-1 Go the podcast. I'm John Pelkey.
And I'm Carissa Galloway, and we're bringing you stories from start to finish to keep the everyday athlete motivated to keep moving towards the next finish.
All right, Carissa, today you had an opportunity to sit down and talk to longtime endurance athlete and entrepreneur Jesse Funk, whose desire to become a professional triathlete literally came crashing down and led him on a different path.
That's right. Jesse was focused on the professional triathlete world, but he also had another passion, and that was to create natural products for athletes. So now active people like Jesse and all of our listeners can take care of themselves better in a toxic world. He's the founder of Soulpre, and we'll learn a little bit about that journey and how athletics and being a visionary go hand in hand. Today in Healthier You, we'll talk about nature's Ozempic and share a listener email from Vivian. Our first Patreon giveaway happening in October. Our first Patreon virtual happy hour happening October 3rd. Look in the show notes for how to support us and join. But just thank you for listening. You guys are awesome. We can't wait to see you soon at Wine and Dine. And let's do this. All right, Jesse, we are so excited that you're here with us, and we are going to start this episode like we start every interview. How are you, and where are you?
I'm doing well, Carissa. For all you listening, it's been a long journey for Carissa and I to get here to talk. I think we started talking back in February, and here we are.
Oh my gosh, was it really February? No one's surprised by that. They're like, yeah, she's insane.
Well, it's like you've got a busy schedule. I've got a busy schedule, but so I'm doing well. Hanging out here with my cat Norman, who's baking in the sun here in the office with me. But I'm here in Kansas City, so right in the smack dab heart of the U.S. So we kind of get all the different weather this time of year. Fortunately, we're getting nice weather right now, but so that's kind of where I hail from.
Well, I am obsessed. I'm glad you introduced us to Norman. And so John Pelkey, our co-host, is not here. He had to put his beloved dog down yesterday, so he kind of needed, you know, as you understand, as a pet owner, a little bit of space, but he would be obsessed.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am a cat person, so I want Norman to be with me.
Yeah, Norman's here. Yeah, and I sympathies to John. We actually, my wife and I just moved about a month ago, and we weren't here a week, and we lost one of our cats. So we've been through that recently.
Yeah,
yeah. So I absolutely understand, you know, what's going on there and how he feels. So
I have asked for. I haven't had a pet in. Gosh. 6 years because of travel, and I have asked for one for my 40th birthday, a cat. I don't think it's going to happen, but we're on, like, you know how you have to like get to a place like, okay, I think we're ready, like, for a pet, like, you know, we're doing the steps. My other thing before we dive in is that, are you a Chiefs fan? Did you just move to Kansas City?
No, I born and bred.
So you're a Chiefs fan?
Yeah, I've been here quite a while. It's too bad we're not doing a video version. I'll show you.
I know Norman's here.
I have a friend who works for the Chiefs, so I just saw him recently and got to see, you know, got to wear the Super Bowl rings and that kind of stuff. So they're pretty massive, really cool pieces. He works in the production team.
Oh, cool. So
he's one of the guys that's taking all the cool shots and putting them together and doing the international marketing and that kind of stuff. So so we definitely watch all the Chiefs games and enjoying the going well that's going on right now. After decades of not going so well.
Are you enjoying all the new Chiefs fans, particularly women that are coming out because of Taylor?
I don't know that I have a whole lot of opinion on it. You know, the more the merrier, you know, you can watch, that's great. Come out, support it.
Well, no, I didn't know if Chiefs fans are like, oh, these aren't real fans, they're Taylor fans, but you're saying it's okay, so.
Oh, no, I'm not a big fan of, like, gatekeeping, you know, hobbies and activities. Like, I mean, like, we'll talk about, just like, you know, I come from the performance side of endurance sports, but just like most people don't, and that's perfectly fine. Like, that's not the purpose of it, and I'm never going to be like, absolutely, no, if you're not serious about whatever, then you can't. That's dumb. Just like enjoy your thing.
Yeah.
Let other people enjoy it. It doesn't hurt you for somebody else to enjoy the Chiefs or enjoy running or try. Like it doesn't affect you. Just like enjoy your thing, let somebody else enjoy it
Yeah.
and go on about what you're doing.
That's like a very Run Disney mindset. I feel like a lot of when we get to Run Disney, it's a very welcoming, like family aspect. And I love that we're starting this conversation. I have one more. We're going to move on. But Hallmark movie, Chiefs love story, Chiefs Christmas love story. Are you going to be in for that? It's coming out November 30th, I believe.
Well, we're definitely going to be interested in watching it. So what's funny is that, so I told you my wife and I just moved, but
Yeah.
so the original promo that kind of sparked it all off. So it was a little advertisement. Our previous next door neighbor is the one that wrote that ad. We have little tendrils into these
Wow.
Kansas City things and.
Jesse, you're getting a lot of fans right now listening. I know. Cause I just Cats, Chiefs, Hallmark, you are hitting all of my favorite things. Except I'm a Charger fan, but we can let that go for now. All right, let's talk about you because we're here to chat about your journey to creating Soulpre. We know that we live in a toxic world, and you wanted to make sure that active people could take care of themselves in sort of a natural way. But before we get to the journey of that creation, that kind of starts with you and your background in triathlon. So how did you get started in triathlon?
Yeah, so I'm a runner by trade. So I always think about it as like a discipline or a trade. I ran in high school. I started running in 8th grade, so I was 12 at the time. And I got into it because everybody else hated doing it. You get run laps in gym as a warm-up,
Yep.
or at least we did, a lot of schools do, and everybody hated doing it, and I was like wanted to be the first one to get back. That's just
Okay.
my general
Yeah.
MO is if everybody else hates doing it, I'm gonna love it. Like I just decide this, I'm gonna love this thing.
Okay.
So I got into running because everybody else didn't like it, and then just continued on. And I got a scholarship to run at what was an NAIA school. It's now Division II, but they did the transition the year after I left, but we competed with a lot of Division II schools, and track and cross country is a different kind of beast when it comes to college because you mix conferences and D3, D2, NAIA, they all mix. D1 kind of lives on its own because it's a different plane. But so I did that in college pretty seriously, and I just wasn't done. I still wanted something else. So after college, I joined up with the USA Triathlon's Collegiate Recruitment Program. This is for people that want to do draft legal. So not the long course, half Ironman, Ironman kind of stuff, but the stuff you see in the Olympics, where you can group up on the bike, and then now the new format with the relay, which is really exciting to watch.
Yeah.
I always like to say that with the clarification that I was kind of like just a fortunate hanger on.
Okay.
It was early days in the
Yeah,
program.
yeah.
So like I was running like high 15s for my 5K in college, which is pretty good
Yeah.
for average Joe. But as far as like recruiting for pros, they really want you to be like in the 14s.
For pro triathletes. Okay.
So, it was run by Barbara Lindquist at the time. And I guess she just had a soft spot for me. I'm not really sure why she let me on, because so this is the time period where like Gwen Jorgensen had just come into and out of the program. My first year was the year Katie Zafiris won age group nationals, and then the following year she went on to start her pro program. Taylor, I always say Taylor Spivey. Sorry, Taylor. I've talked to Taylor before. I kept hearing it, Taylor Spivey is at the Olympics, so I don't know which it is, but she was coming through the program at that time. So a lot of the really top women coming through the program as I was doing it, and just got hats off to Barb and letting me kind of hang on and meet some really great people and get some great coaching from her. So I always give a free shout out to her. She is still coaching. So if you want a really great coach, Barb is a great resource. You can go to her website. And she coaches anybody. So
Yep.
even if you're just like starting out, and
Yeah.
she also like, I couldn't tell you how many people would approach me at races. But was that Barb Bliquist? Yeah, that was Barb
Yeah,
Bliquist.
'cause she's a pretty big
But
deal.
just like they could have just approached her. She's so like heartfelt, welcoming, open, and people feel intimidated because so if you haven't been around the sport that long, she was in the Olympics in 2004. She was the first woman to be ranked number one in the world for the US. And so you think, okay, here's this like awesome athlete. She's so intimidating, but just like she coaches everybody at every level and with the same seriousness,
Yeah.
you know, just like it's the same attention to detail and what's going on with your life and those kind of things. And she's just awesome. So that's kind of how I got into the sport. And then just the draft legal pathway didn't quite work out for me. I got to do a few draft legal races as an amateur. And just my swim just not quite fast enough. So I transitioned over to long course, which suited me a little bit better, which I knew it would.
Are we talking full, like
I like the short
Ironman
stuff.
distance or
So
Ironman 70.3 or 140.6?
70.3 is what I was focused
Okay.
on. Yeah. So I've actually never done a full. My first and last 70.3 was Eagle Man. The very first time I did it's if you guys have been out to that course, it is a very sun-baked course. It was like, I
It's
don't
a
know, in the
beautiful, very
90s.
flat, it's flat, it's
Fast,
fast,
flat, but
flat.
there is almost no shade.
Yeah. And it's in
So
June.
yeah,
It's
I ended up in the medical tent the first time I did it.
from heat or from in incident?
Yeah, from
From heat.
heat. And then the last time I did it, I ended up in the emergency room. So from a crash,
Yeah.
but that kind of ended the pro career, not pro career, the chase for a pro card. But that's kind of the long and short of
Yeah.
my how did I get into triathlon and the whole, you know, 8 to 10 years that I was doing it. So.
I mean, that's a big commitment for 8 to 10 years. And I always even when we talk to pro triathletes, I think especially pro triathletes, there's so much work that goes into it. And sometimes I feel like I know what they make for winning a race that they've spent 8 months training for, and it doesn't seem to add up. You're putting in this so much blood, sweat, and tears, and 100% focus and pain over and over again, and risk. And then sometimes it doesn't pay off. So for you had this focus. I was gonna, go pro. You had the accident. How did that sort of shift your mindset and open up new opportunities for you?
Yeah, so I'll back you up just a little bit. So yeah, you don't do it for the money.
But you gotta make money. So, I mean, that's what I say. I'm like, what are you?
Yeah, so I
It's
mean
crazy.
you don't do it for the money. So that's kind of where like my company came from is like I knew going into it just my athletic ability, hey, I might have a shot at getting a pro card, but like I never had the idea that like I'm gonna make a living from triathlon because there's a very I mean the Barb Lindquist of the world they do make pretty decent money doing it but they are few and far between and I knew that wasn't going to be my path. It was more of a personal challenge for me to get the pro card than it was like a I'm gonna you know be a working professional
I'm aware.
in the
Yeah,
sport.
I guess that's a
So
distinction. Yeah.
yeah and getting you know sponsorship money is hard to come by and all that kind of stuff. So it's just like how am I going to support myself doing it? So I was like okay I need to basically build a lifestyle business and be an entrepreneur so that I have the time to do it while also, you know, making some money. And then just naturally, I could sponsor myself, you know, which is not a ton of money, but then you can write off some of those things because I'm wearing the race kit and I'm
Yep.
doing advertising at races and all those kind of things. So just kind of making it all work together. And then now I've gotten lost in my own train of thought. What was your actual question
Oh,
that you
we
were
never know what
asking?
our I don't even know. Sometimes we just say a lot and then we don't even actually have questions. But no, kind of talking about, you had a focus of, pro triathlete, you were working on that,
Yes.
but then you crashed at Eagle Man and that kind of came to realization, whether it was from recovery, whatever, I don't know. They're like, I'm gonna do something different. And that turned into, a huge turning point for you in terms of creating what would go to become Soulpre. So how did that, is this something you'd been thinking about? Like, how did that happen? Because it's very
Yeah.
hard to start.
So, okay. So Soulpre actually was born in, if I remember right, 2016. I don't know if it was 2016 or 2017 when products actually launched. I didn't crash in 2000 until 2018. So the company was already existed by the time I crashed. If anybody actually listened, I used to do a podcast. So if anybody's listened to my podcast, they've heard this story a bajillion times, but just like,
we want to hear it. We want the full version. Don't leave anything out. We want, the big version.
Yeah. So this is for anybody that does racing. I always say this because my crash shouldn't have happened. I was having just an excellent day. I had my best swim at a 7.3 distance ever. I was, for me, crushing the bike. I was 25 miles into the bike, doing 25 miles an hour. I'd never ridden that fast before, like in my power range, just feeling great. And I was coming through a left-hand turn, and another rider passed me on the inside of the turn, pushed me to the outside of the road, where I hit a patch of gravel and hit the pavement. So like, that never should have happened, because you shouldn't pass somebody on an inside turn mm-hmm. like that. Like, it's not safe, which I unfortunately get to be the poster child for. So just like, if you're racing and you need to pass somebody, please don't do it on a turn. Like mm-hmm. there's multiple reasons you don't do it. But almost all of them because people end up in crashes. But just, it was, I had put so much of myself into just trying to do this dumb thing, this get this pro card, you know, like it I was, you know, possessed for, like I said, I started halfway through college, and it was 2018. I graduated in 2011, so you know, just a number of years afterwards, just still grinding away. And I was working out, you know, 15 to 20 hours a week. And I always like to clarify, like, that's 15 to 20 hours a week in motion, not warm up, not cool down, not in the shower, not stretching, just like physically moving 15 to 20 hours a week. So a pro schedule to do it. And I was just broken, like mentally. I mean, physically, my collarbone shattered, so it shattered long ways. It split long ways, split apart, and then a chunk came off. And just like, there was like basically like a concave section where you didn't even seem like I had a collarbone, because it got shoved down into my like chest cavity.
Yeah.
And I had to fly home from Eagle Man like that. It wasn't until eight days later that I had surgery for it. But it was, you know, I just, you put so much of yourself into something, and then like you go through this like trauma basically.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And I didn't have it anymore. I'd had this hunger, this just insatiable hunger that kept driving me forward. And then I'm having this day where it finally looked like it was all going to come together. I was really going to have a shot of, you know, placing top three and finally getting that. Mm-hmm. And just, you hit the pavement at 25 miles an hour and day's over. I still raced the next season, back to just like Olympic distance, because I like the short stuff, mm-hmm. but it just wasn't there. You know, I just didn't care the way I did before. I didn't have that hunger anymore. And I'd say I still don't really have it. I'm still finding my footing nowadays. I do 5Ks and stuff now, which people have this weird thing where they go, well, don't you want to do half marathon or a marathon or ultras? And I'm just like, no, I like going fast. And like,
yeah.
So there's this kind of, there's a little bit of a weird culture of like,
5Ks aren't good enough. Sometimes. And we have that at Disney. We'll say like, oh, who's, you know, we don't like to use the word just, like, because we have these challenges where somebody's doing a 5K, 10K, and half in a marathon. And it does feel like we try to be very succinct and not say, oh, you're only doing a 5K, like that diminishes right. the distance. But I got to be honest, I'm not more scared. 5Ks hurt so bad for
if
me.
If you're doing them right.
If you're trying to do it hard, it's scary because you don't have the, you know, in a half, you're like, it's going to hurt, but it's like a fatigue and not like, I can't breathe. My lungs are going to burn. I'm only a mile two.
Yeah,
that's a different
kind of fitness. Yeah. It's a different challenge, right?
Like, that's, yeah.
The longer you go, the more it is you fatigue from time than from effort.
Yeah.
And then the shorter ones, like, you got to go hard and you're going to fatigue from effort, and your brain's going to be yelling at you to stop because you shouldn't be going that hard, mm-hmm. but you do it anyway. So it's just a different thing. And I like the short stuff. I love doing it in college. I really kind of found my stride in doing the 5K on the track in college. So that's what I'm doing nowadays. And, you know, getting back to really enjoying it. I'm still swimming. I'm probably a bit heavy for a runner, to be honest, because I still do a fair amount of swimming. But I don't miss all the time on the bike. People keep asking me, they'll see my like triathlon shirts at the gym. You're not going to do another one? Like I said, no, I'm retired. Like I don't miss all the time in the saddle. But I do still enjoy all the running. So, you know, my coach and I we're building my mileage back and trying to get ready to race Masters track and that kind of stuff. So,
well, that's exciting. My mom and my stepdad are big Masters track athletes. They keep trying to get my husband and I personally just not talented enough to, step out there. Cause some of those Masters times, when you look at them, they're not shabby. They're pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah. For Masters track for men, to be in the mix, I think you got to be in the 17s. Or if you really want to do well, or 16s, sometimes you'll get some of the Masters guy at Nationals go in the 15s. So it's, if you still want to compete and you're getting older, like it's a great group.
Yeah, no, it's such an amazing community. They travel all around the world. Literally, they were just in Finland for, I think, European championships because my stepdad is British and he has the 70 record for like javelin. He's a great thrower. My mom does the heptathlon. She's a great effort putter out. Love you, Mom. but no, it's good to do these things and to have it balance with, you know, you're able to transition from this extremely hyper-focused goal to, okay, it does take some time, I think, to kind of reconcile, I guess what the word would be is disappointment, to I still have a love and an ability to do endurance activity. And I also have a love for the community, which you see when you have, you know, when Soulpre has sort of expanded after your transition out of hardcore triathlon world, if you will.
Yeah, it gave me more time to focus on the business stuff and just knowing like, okay, well, it's like that's, it's the, you know, my wife and I talk about this in various times and, you know, like with moving right now and changes, all this stuff going on in our lives, it's like, it's the ending of a season. It's the start of a new season. Mm-hmm. And just realizing that it's not like, you don't place a value judgment on it. It's not good or bad. It's just different,
yeah.
You know? And so that's where I'm still able to serve the endurance community with, you know, the products we make. And the things we do, you know, with Soulpre as a company, and hopefully as it grows and gets bigger, and you know, be able to do more and more stuff. But yeah, it kind of still gives me like a kind of a foot in the door a little bit in terms of like not just being, you know, out on my own doing my own thing, you know, living entrepreneur life inside my own office by myself in space.
Exactly. We are always aiming to get you to that next finish line, and we've created an exciting opportunity for you guys coming up with Galloway Customized Training. Check the show notes for more information on how to sign up, and here's Chris with a little more about Customized.
Hi, I'm Chris Twiggs, Chief Training Officer at Galloway Training Programs and coach of Galloway Customized Training. When Jeff Galloway and I put together Customized Training, our goal was to offer the best value in professional coaching for runners and walkers. Starting from a questionnaire to determine your current fitness, goals, and commitments to family and work, I build a schedule that's perfect for you, but it doesn't end there. Each week, with your feedback, I adjust your plan to help you reach your goals, and I introduce you to a worldwide family of customized runners and walkers who are cheering you on. I look forward to working with you and to being your coach and your biggest fan as we run, walk, run with Galloway Customized Training.
So let's talk about the journey to Soulpre. I know our listeners are going to get to kind of get to know you a little bit more as we talk about it, not only on this episode, but in future episodes. But I love how it started for you as like a lot of businesses start. Like you had a problem and you couldn't find the best solution. So you essentially created your own.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share that a little bit?
Yeah. So it's almost literally scratching my own itch.
As I'm literally itching. I think when you think about itching, you like start to...
I'll get you some cream. You'll be all right. For any of you that are from Run Disney but haven't done a triathlon yet, and then you know you'll be able to imagine this. And for the you that do triathlons, you know you spend a lot of time in the pool. it's just what it is. You know, you got to spend time in the water to get better at swimming. It's a very technique focused sport, so you cannot cheat it. You cannot pretend that you're going to do well. You got to spend time there. And so I spent a lot of time in the pool. And what happened to me, which doesn't happen to everybody, is I actually developed what's effectively a chemical burn on my eyelid from all the exposure to chlorine.
Wow.
And there were a few products out at the time, which I tried, but some of them would get rid of the chlorine, but then they would like really irritate that red skin that was on my eyelid. Because for those of you who don't know, the skin on your face is thinner and a lot more sensitive than the skin on the rest of your body. If any of you are into skincare, you know that. But so when you have really sensitive skin, it's going to be more vulnerable to, let's say, less discerning products, maybe is the best way to put it. Things that could use effective stuff that is good for general population, but maybe is not as gentle or caring about your skin. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a entrepreneur at heart. So I just went and tried to figure out like, well, how do you get rid of chlorine? And one of the things that wasn't really being used at the time was that vitamin C gets rid of chlorine. Like, well, why don't we just use vitamin C? So that's kind of where the company got started, was bringing out a product that uses vitamin C to literally chemically break apart the chlorine that's on your skin and your hair. Instead of using the other common, really cheap chemical, it's called sodium thiosulfate. Mm-hmm. It does break apart chlorine just like vitamin C does. The difference is it's a sulfate, which, you know, people may have seen like products that say sulfate free, blah, blah, blah. It's not necessarily that sulfates are bad per se, but because of their molecular structure, they have a tendency to irritate some people's skin. So that's why you see a lot of sulfate-free products, because mm-hmm. you don't have to have them. So sodium thiosulfate, although it's effective, it was even more irritating to my skin. So I tried to make something that was more gentle, but just as effective in getting rid of chlorine, so that it wasn't a matter of I could have this or that. It's the best of both worlds.
So now as the, you know, you started experimenting with that, how do you even go about like being a molecular chemist and figuring all this out? I can imagine that it's not something you can do at home, or like, how did you figure all this out?
Funny enough. So I'll preface this with saying that I did not do it at home originally, but during the pandemic, I actually did kind of build out a lab in my basement. And was moving towards that, doing things at home. But so what I did, still do nowadays, because the model is more sustainable for me. I'll say I'm a solopreneur, but it's not entirely true. I contract with different companies and freelancers, and I have a whole team. I'm just the only full-time guy. So what you do for skincare in particular, but this goes for pretty much anything, there are companies called contract manufacturers, and their job is to make somebody else's stuff. They don't typically sell their own stuff mm-hmm. to the public. They sell to other businesses. So in the case of skincare, you find a contract manufacturer you want to work with, and then you go through and say, like in my case, hey, vitamin C is important. We have to have vitamin C in this because the function of this product is to get rid of chlorine. And then you can go through iterations. You go, okay, that's not enough vitamin C. We need to increase it. Like, I still felt like there was chlorine on my skin. Get other people to test it. What do they say? Or maybe it's on the other side. Like, it's really effective, but it's also very expensive, which is why people didn't use vitamin C previously, because mm-hmm. It's much more expensive than sodium thiosulfate. So you kind of dial in both performance and cost and, you know, kind of some of the subjective measures, like how does it feel? How does it foam? How does it smell? All those kind of things. Through iterations with the contract manufacturer. And then you go, okay, great. Like, now I want to order however much. And I originally started by ordering bulk and packaging stuff myself, which I moved away from. And then back during the pandemic, I moved back to because there were all the supply chain issues during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Like, I was out of stock of things a month at a time, and it just became shenanigans. So I bought like semi-automatic filling machines
Wow.
and labeling machines and all these kind of things just to, so I was doing like thousands of bottles of stuff when I would, by myself, or I hired my one of my business mentors who's in his 70s to come over. Walter, you probably won't listen to this, Walter, but if you do, thank you. He got to be my production manager, and then when I got rid of all the stuff in the basement and everything was cleared out, and I could move back to production at the contract manufacturer. I had to tell him that he was fired, and then he no longer had a job as my production manager anymore, which he was so sad about. But yeah, so that's the basic process, and it doesn't matter, whether you're doing skincare products or you're doing throw blankets or you're doing, label printers, whatever it is. There's probably a manufacturer that can help you kind of bring your product to life.
But you've got to be passionate about it because there's so much legwork that goes behind, bringing something from the ground up. And I know we talked about sort of where you started with the chlorine and everything, but you guys have an expansive, you've expanded to different products. One that I particularly love is the soap because I think I love that as a whole, the world is looking at, wait, we put all these chemicals and stuff that we're putting on our bodies every single day. Like, does this make sense long term? But then you're also looking at it as someone who has an expansive history of being an athlete. And I love the lemongrass and tea tree, and I love the shield kind of concept behind that. So can you talk a little bit about that product? 'Cause I think that's one of my favorites.
So that, I mean, the Shield series and our orange bar. So I never know quite what to call it, the original bar, the athletic bar, whatever it is, the bright orange bar. That's our number one selling product. And so I'm going to use this word with the caveat that I'm not supposed to use this word, and the FDA doesn't know what it is.
I don't think they listen. Like the 7-year-old guy and my mom, they're not listening. So.
So just so like the idea of the product is to have like a natural antifungal product, and it's not supposed to be curative, and that's where you're not supposed to use the word antifungal, because antifungal is like a curative medical term. But trying to communicate the idea, you kind of end up trying to use it, but you're not supposed to, because it's federally regulated. It's only supposed to be for medicated stuff. But so what we say about the product basically is that it helps aid your skin's natural barrier to protect you from the bad effects of fungus. And you go like, oh, fungus, that's gross. Like, why are we talking about fungus?
A
I mean,
fungus, I
you
just
go
think
to the
of
gym, like, even if
it's
you're a runner
there.
or a triathlete or whatever, like, most likely you're going to spend at least a little time at the gym. And unfortunately, not all gyms are perfectly sterile
I mean,
environments.
I only go to hotel gyms, and I gotta be honest, those probably are the least sterile in environments.
And just so you can pick stuff up, and it's just the nature of the beast. But also, and this is an important distinction, is it's not always a matter of like, hey, I pick something up. Is like, we have a microbiome on our skin. Like, there are bugs, basically, bacteria that live on our skin, good things that live on our skin. And sometimes, when we give them enough food and fuel and wet environments, like we do as athletes, sometimes they overgrow, and that creates a skin condition too. So that's kind of what the soap is meant to address. It's like kind of a preventive measure. Again, I'm not supposed to say preventive, but the English language is hard, and trying to communicate these concepts. And he uses those essential oils to do that, which I'll also give the caveat that there's a lot of pseudoscience and woo-woo thinking surrounding essential oils. So
I
it's a
love
very,
essential oils.
well,
I'm
I mean,
on
you'll
like
see.
on board.
Can we, well, no, I just want to make the clarification, because there are companies that will be like, this thing will cure your cancer or whatever. It's like, no, it's not, like, it's not for that. But there is, I developed this particular blend based off of scholarly research that had been done into how particular individual essential oils would be effective against different strains of bacteria and fungus. So I went and looked at what academic researchers are doing and efficacy levels before I went and go, okay, this is what I think is going to work. And then did it actually work in the
Not
field?
just because it smells good, basically, but it
So
does.
just, there's a lot of, I'll just say BS without actually pronouncing it, around essential oils. So I just want to be clear that like there are lines of hey, this actually does work. And there's lots of lines of, this is complete nonsense. So I understand there's this weird perception. So I'd like to talk about that and touch on that a little bit because of what we're doing, that it is rooted in, you know, research. And I think the page is still up. Just I think it's just sobri.com/shield. I'd have to check. But, you know, we post all the basically the research I use to
very cool
to come up with what I put together.
I mean, and I love that. And I think you're taking like an athlete's mindset and like diving into research. Like an athlete dives into workouts, dives into the history, dives into the numbers. And you take that mindset to your entrepreneurial world. And you're saying, well, yes, I want something that is effective, but I also need to understand and make sure it really is. You know, you need that body of work, just like you can't show up to a start line of a race without sort of your body of work. As everybody knows, John and I are Floridians. John has a pool in his backyard. I have kids and kids love swimming and my son takes swim lessons. For kids, I think when I grew up, it was you got to take a shower because your hair is going to turn green. I think yeah. I do still say that to my kids, but like finding products that work for kids is also a challenge as well, especially for us, you know, Southerners.
Yeah.
So is there options there?
Yeah. And that's where like, I kind of struggle on the marketing side because so what would be ideal is I would take the exact same. So this is like a marketer's trick here, and I don't do this currently, but so you'll see this sometimes where I can take the exact same product because it's kid safe. Like there's nothing wrong with using the products with kids because it's meant for sensitive skin and kids typically are going to use that kind of product.
I have two very sensitive skinned children, by the way. I have one redhead, which obviously redheads always are the most sensitive.
Always going to have some troubles. But so the marketer's trick would basically be, I'm going to take literally the same product that's inside of the products I already sell. I'm going to put them in a different bottle with a different label.
And a unicorn.
Yeah, it says kids on it. And it's like more flashy. It has bigger colors. And like, it's the exact same product. And it's a trick, you know. It happens because when we as consumers are looking for a product, you don't want to think about it. You just look at it and go, oh, that's for kids. I know I can get it bought, and you move on with your day. So it's a marketer's trick, but it is used for a purpose because it is trying to help you as the end consumer, like disambiguate, hey, this is actually appropriate for my kid. I'm just a small enough business and the runs are small enough of the product that I don't think I can sustain both labels at this point. But there's nothing wrong with using it for kids. So
good option for the whole family then if you have a pool or anything like that. I'd love to dive into the idea of like an entrepreneur's mindset because I think it's similar to when you set a big athletic goal. Like you have this goal, you know it's going to be really hard to get there. You're not 100% sure. Like, do you have any advice for other people that have big goals or big dreams, but feel like, I don't know if I can do this. The journey seems too long with too many unknowns.
Yeah. So there's a phrase I use. I was invited to speak with a group of young entrepreneurs last week, I think it was, which was a scheduling conflict for us.
Yes, we were very busy, which is great that you did that.
Yeah. And so what I told, this is like a group of middle schoolers are in trying to invent new products and they have a whole class on doing it. And my friend teaches the class. So she invited me to come speak with them. And so what I told them and what I say about, I mean, any of this, like endurance sports, I think is a great life lesson teacher. Like it teaches you, if you take the parallels and the metaphors from the sport, like it'll get you through anything. So what I say about entrepreneurship or whether you're trying to go from couch to Ironman, which I don't recommend, but I do see people try to attempt it. Whatever it is you're trying to do, it's almost, I liken it sometimes to like smashing your head into a brick wall.
Okay.
It seems stupid. It hurts a lot. Sometimes you're like, why am I doing this? Seems like the dumbest thing ever. Like, why am I hitting my head on a brick wall? And then eventually like, you notice, oh, like it's starting to crack a little bit. Like maybe I'll just keep hitting my head against this wall and it will get some more cracks. And then eventually there's a little daylight on the other side of this wall. If I just keep smashing my head against this wall. And I use it just because we see and glorify the end result a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, the media is very good at this.
entrepreneur sells their business for $100 million and they're retired to the Caribbean and, well, let's interview. Well, you don't see all of the, like, smashing their head against the wall that happened for them to get there. So I like it because it's very, it's visual. And, like, we've all smashed our thumbs or hit our head on something where it hurts. And you think about just basically embracing the pain, you know, not in an acute, I'm going to injure myself kind of way, but just like the frustrations. There are setbacks. Sometimes you hit the pavement at 25 miles an hour and you didn't mean to, you know, but like you go, okay, like that happened, but what do I do now? Like the brick wall is still there. Do you keep hitting your head against the wall? Or do you pick a different wall? You know, but there are just frustrations in life. And sometimes you just have to continue to deal with the frustrations to get to where you want to go. That doesn't mean that it's not like, it's not enjoyable along the way. You know, maybe you're like smashing your head against the wall and you see a flower that's growing out of the crack in the sidewalk at the bottom. You're like, that's a pretty flower. Whack. Okay. You hit it again. Yeah. There's another frustration. But just that's kind of the mentality I guess I have, is relaxing into it. I also talk about like getting comfortable being uncomfortable. That's a pretty common phrase. Yeah. And that's just, again, embracing that it's not gonna be comfortable all the time. And that's okay. Like that's life. Yeah.
I think it's hard for us to fail and then want to feel like we can still succeed. It's a hard, there's a lot of self-doubt, you know, that goes along with both endurance events and I guess basically all of life. It's just having that commitment to know that whatever I'm going through, there's the flower or the wall's going to eventually break, I guess.
Yeah. And just, Carissa, if you can turn your mic gain up, your like volume went way down for some reason.
Is that better now?
Still about the same.
I don't know which one I'm supposed to be switching, so I'm just going to keep turning
things.
You're
coming up.
Am I coming up that way? No? Yes.
You're more audible.
Okay, that's so weird.
I don't know whether we'll have to cut this part, but just...
Weston will edit it at the end.
Make sure that everybody can hear you.
Can you hear me now? Better?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any... We have our final closing questions that we asked all of our guests they're about to get to, but is there anything else you want our listeners to know about Soulbury, about your journey, you know, about why we should support, you know, these small companies like yours?
It's always a tough one to advocate for myself, I guess. So I think... As an entrepreneur, I think about my job is basically to solve problems and care about your problems that you're not sure how to solve. So, you know, if you think if I do that well and you think that the products that I make can do that for you, then I'm more than happy to serve you. But it is a one thing to think about is like a small business, any business, but especially a small business, is an act of service. And you know that ultimately, like, I don't get paid unless I've done the job to solve your problems for you. So I don't necessarily think about it from the standpoint of like, you know, shop with me just because I'm a small business or whatever. Like, I would absolutely be happy to have you shop with me, and I hope that I can solve your problems. But you take a look at small businesses because often they're doing innovative things that big businesses are not, because they're already established and they don't have to. Mm-hmm. So usually you can get a little bit more personal service. Some of the things that kind of get missed when everything starts to get big and has to be systematized and automated and becomes more like corporate blank face. That's the kind of thing you're going to get out of a small business. But for mine in particular, again, it's just hopefully I, you know, doing a good job at solving the problems that you might have with just daily cleanliness to, you know, dealing with like dried out hair and dried out skin and that kind of stuff. So.
Awesome. So we have some closing questions that we're going to get to before we wrap. You talked about you're running your 5Ks. We know that those can either be very leisurely or very painful. So when it's a workout or a run and you get to a hard place, you talked about your brain telling you to stop. How do you motivate yourself to keep going?
I think it's a little different for me nowadays because I've been doing it for so long. I mean, this is my, I think, 23rd year of competitive endurance sports. And it's, it's two things. So I got to see my college coach somewhat recently, and we were talking about, I found an indoor track to train at over the winter in town here, which I hadn't had. I didn't even know existed.
I don't know winter exists. I live in Florida, but I guess that is a thing. we call that the good season for us. We need indoor tracks for the summer.
Yeah. So I was recalling it. It was like 15 degrees outside, snowing, and just generally miserable outside. And I was doing like 800 meter repeats at like 5K pace on this indoor track. And it's just, they're not comfortable. Like, that's just the nature of it. But within that place, I do two things. One thing is I've been doing for a long time, and that's just, it's literally just like breathing and being present, like trying not to think about, you know, oh, I've got five more laps. Mm-hmm. Right now, you're just, it's, I'll take it 100 meters at a time, or a, you know, a straightaway. It's a 358 meter indoor track, so it's not quite 100 meters, but just a straightaway, a curve, just one at a time. You literally just break it down into the smallest chunks to be present, and then just embrace with, like, this is how my body feels to go this pace. Mm-hmm. Relax. That's like relaxing into the pain. You're not trying to fight it, you know, and it's not an acute pain, like, oh, something sharp just,
it's
in my
just
knee.
The discomfort or stop. The but, like, inability just, to breathe.
Your lungs are working, all those kind of things. But then the other thing, which I was recounting to my coach from college, is just like, I've always loved it. So I just, as I'm going through this, and just, it's uncomfortable, especially if you haven't done it in a while, your first kind of intervals at that pace are just not great. No matter who you are, if you've been off, you've just been doing base training, and you're coming back in, it's not comfortable. But reminding myself, like, it's 15 degrees outside, it's 6 a.m., the sun's not even up yet, it's snowing outside, there's no place I'd rather be than basically in alone,
yeah,
in this indoor track, cranking out 800s. It to me has become like partially what it is to feel alive. Like, you have all of these feelings. Yeah, you're uncomfortable and you're sweating and you're breathing hard, but like, it's like, not to be masochistic, but just like, it's a celebration of like, this is what my body can do. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm alive right now.
Yeah.
I'm here doing this thing that a lot of people take for granted. Like, they have the bodies that they could be doing this or something similar, or whatever it is that they enjoy, but just like embracing that it is a thing you chose to do. You know, it's something that you wanted to do, and seeing it as part of what it is to be alive, I think is, you know, a little esoteric, I guess, but something that helps motivate me, you know, in those kind of little moments.
Oh, that's really, I like a lot of what you said there. It's a really cool statement. I think feeling that and sort of being present. And I always like, it's the hardest, most discomforting part of your day, but it might be the best part sort of your day when you get that time to do that. 'Cause you're away from everything else. You're not at work. You're not at home. You're not, you know, you're kind of that's your time. Last question. Hopefully it's an easy one, but how can people keep up with you?
Yeah. So, as I was telling Carissa, for a long time, I think 4 years, I did a YouTube channel and a podcast. So all that stuff is still available, youtube.com/soulfree. I'm not currently uploading new stuff, but I do still respond to comments on there. So if there's, you know, you watch a video and you're like, oh, just make a comment. I will use, if it's a question that should be answered, I typically will answer. If it's just like a comment, sometimes I won't answer, but that, you know, you can email me funkj@soulfree.com if you have questions about whatever, my journey, you want to talk running, whatever, you just shoot me an email, no big deal. And then obviously you can check out the products on soulfree.com.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing sort of a little bit about your journey, your athletic mindset, your entrepreneurial mindset, and how you are bringing natural products to the active world. And as I said, guys, you're going to be hearing a little bit more about Jesse in the next couple months on different episodes. So thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Carissa.
All right, athletes, here's the drill. Time to shape up your diet. Carissa, give them the goods.
All right, John, today we're going to go back to the topic that seems to be one of the most popular nutrition topics. I mean, I was going to ask if you watch the news, but I was going to ask, like, there's not a lot of news. Are you hearing any nutrition news, or are you just hearing political news? I'm not asking you to talk about political news, but do you hear about Ozempic in the news, I guess is my question.
I certainly see a lot of advertising for Ozempic, yeah. And I know it's a topic of discussion, but I really don't. I'm not 100% sure why, and like most television commercials for things like that, they don't really make it clear what it's all about. So
that's actually true. So we've talked about Ozempic before, which is, you know, a drug that's been used for managing different disease states, managing mostly for type 2 diabetes, and it's working for people to lose weight. So then people who are not needing it for its initial reasons are taking it to help support weight loss. There's also research that's showing that people who have type 2 diabetes and take Ozempic have lower rates of dementia. The reason why Ozempic works, though, is something called GLP-1. So overall, what Ozempic does is it regulates appetite, insulin production, and blood sugar levels, all of which help you lose weight, be more satisfied with less food, and create better health markers. But GLP-1 is the magic thing. GLP-1 is something naturally made in your body. So I saw an advertisement the other day for just supplementing GLP-1. And I thought, well, let's just talk about what GLP-1 is. I know that sounds fascinating and interesting, but I just wanted people to let you know this is a real thing. And you can actually really, your body really makes that. And what it does is the same things that it does when you take it with Ozempic. Appetite regulation, that signal to your brain that you're full. And from hearing Ozempic stories, I think there's people that kind of how like we don't all emotionally do things the same way. Some people's bodies just don't say they're full. And I think we kind of heard that with Stephanie running through breast cancer when we talked to her. She's like never felt like what it feels like to be full. So there's some people who don't have that fullness signal. GLP-1 helps that. It also helps insulin production. Type 2 diabetes is where your body has slowed down its insulin production. GLP-1 helps that. And it also helps delay how fast your stomach empties, which also leads to you feeling fuller longer and not needing to eat as often. That's what GLP-1 does. And all of this helps with weight loss, where we're using things, I'm just saying words that you're going to forget, but semaglutide and eraglutide, these treat type 2 diabetes and obesity. And these are the chemicals that mimic your body's natural GLP-1. So then you think, well, if my body can make this GLP-1, how can I get more of it, right? Yeah. It's not really found in foods, but certain foods stimulate the release of your body to have this GLP-1. Okay. Does that make sense?
It does.
Like you can't just eat it. Your body only makes it when you eat certain things. So those are high fiber foods, fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, healthy fats, avocados, nuts, and olive oils, and protein rich foods. Don't these sound like things that we should be eating?
I was going to say, basically just eat well. I mean, these are really, really things that many times you've thrown at us and go, here's a good diet.
But how many times, and I know, and I say the same things every time, eat protein with your carbohydrates. But how many times do we just grab highly processed, fried, or carbohydrate-based foods? That's the standard American diet. Bagel and cream cheese, grabbing takeout, pasta at night. Then you're not getting that balance of your carbohydrate with the things that are going to trigger the GLP-1.
That makes sense.
So it's kind of like I want you to ponder this. I want you to think about this. There's people that are now saying we all should be on Ozempic, and I just don't think we should ever all be on any type of medication for a long term that we don't know that. But I do think that it's interesting in thinking, and of this, I want people to think the most about high fiber foods. Adding in the more high fiber foods with the protein when you eat could help get all the benefits that Ozempic and GLP-1 have to offer. So that's my little nutrition nugget of the day. If you have other questions, email them to us. I'm happy to answer all of your nutrition questions. I'm happy for you to join Healthier You so we can get a better grip on your nutrition and answer more of these. Go to GallowayCourse.com and use the code podcast to save.
Athletes, listen up. It's mail call time. Announcer free, present.
All right. Thank you, Sarge. Today's question, Carissa, is from Vivian, and it is for you. She says, I'm a 40-something Disney speed runner and was intrigued by your videos at Running Man. Those were really cool, by the way. Look like a great event. I'm interested in going, but would I fit in? Again, 40-something Disney speak from?
That is a good question. Of course I'm going to say yes, because we're an inclusive community, the endurance community. It was a really cool event, and I think that because of, I kind of talked about last week on the podcast, because the way the one loop event was, where you didn't know who was winning, you didn't know who was first or last, you didn't know how many laps people were on. If you're looking for a half marathon, if you're looking for a marathon, if you're looking to go for a 50K and you want an environment to try it where you don't feel pressure to go more or less, you don't feel this like, what if I fail? I think it's a really, really cool environment, a very supportive environment. We had music going the whole time with the DJ. Everybody was cheering everybody on. Fully stocked aid station. So from like a running point of view, like John, I think you might feel good there. Like, I don't know if you're ever, we're ever going to bully you into another race again. But if it was like, John, one mile is a loop. Maybe you can do seven and do your longest run ever. But if you stop at two, nobody really knows.
I love the concept. I really, really do. I think it is a very, very cool concept.
Yeah. And so Jesse says they're going to do it next year. He said that they only planned for 2 years, but they're going to do it next year. I will say there was a lot of like 25 to 35 year old men there. So Vivian, maybe that entices you to go even more.
Possibly less. We're not going to judge, Vivian.
Or less. There's also, so the whole thing is it's glamping. You stay in a tent. It's kind of, that has that festival vibe. There are also hotels and Airbnbs. I chose an Airbnb because, Johnny, we know Carissa and tents and shared restrooms just aren't a thing.
You're a bit of a dandy.
You're a bit of a dandy. Would you stay in a tent? You would. You'd be fine.
I would stay in
You'd
a tent, but
it.
I'm a bit of a dandy as well. I love hotels.
I just, it's the bathroom situation. Like, I want a tent with a bathroom. But Vivian, I think if you went with or without friends that you would learn a lot, because again, this weekend had amazing speakers, like really top tier speakers. And I think you'd go back saying, wow, that was a lot of fun. And again, I wish we could do a festival like this for Run Disney. Could you imagine a 3-day like Run Disney-ish festival with like a costume contest and
Everyone in technical entertainment and everything who's hearing this is now like cursing your name, and because they're like, oh my God, logistically. But yeah, it would be really, really cool.
It would never happen.
It would really be cool.
It'd be cool. So Vivian, if I'm there, if Jeff's there, we would love to see you. And thank you for emailing us. Keep emailing us questions, comments, whatever. Tell us your pet's name. I don't know. 321gopodcast@gmail.com. And that's it for today. That was fun. I'm glad Jesse was able to chat with us. A great perspective. And see you real soon.
Bye-bye.